on an animal level, going to seek pleasure and avoid pain. So we're multidimensional beings. You know, we have our physical experience, we have our mental experience, we have our spiritual experience and our emotional experience. Like, there's lots going on. It's not just get stuff done or how you look. It's there's so much going on in who we are. So at our essential core, as an animal, we are going to avoid pain at any cost. And if we're coming from that place, if the happy feeling created pain, we're going to just destroy the happy feeling. That's the mind that isn't connected to the heart and the soul. That's its logical game plan. It's very militant. It's like, oh, no, okay, so no more enthusiasm for you.
Yeah, because it's trying to protect us in a sense.
Yes, exactly. And so to not even villainize the mind. So I'm not even saying our minds are brilliant and awesome, but it's that they're never meant to heal the way the body and the heart and the spirit do. And it's all of those things working in conjunction that are who we are.
The good life is one inspired by love and guided by knowledge. You'll find both love and knowledge here on The Misdiagnosed Life. Here is your host, Beverly Butler.
Suicide. It's one of the most heart-wrenching and difficult things a family member or friend could ever hear. And according to the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the U.S. 44,193 Americans die each year by suicide. Well, I've got with me today Jenna Smith, who's an ontological coach and shamanic intuitive. And she's experienced this tragedy firsthand when her father committed suicide a few years ago. And we're going to be talking about that along with the subject of teen suicide. But first, I want to dedicate this show to a really good person, a wonderful host and friend, Kelly Murphy. She was a former host here at America Out Loud, and she had her own show, and she committed suicide last year. And it was such a very tragic and heartbreaking time for her family and her friends. And no one suspected her of ever doing that. And this just goes to show that you never really know what's going on in someone's life. And it's a reminder for all of us that we all need to keep this in mind and try to be kind to everyone, because we really never know what people are going through. And, you know, they say that we especially need to be good and kind to those who are hardest to love, because they say they're the ones that need it the most. And, you know, suicide is such a tragedy. But this is one thing that can be prevented if people get the right kind of help. And as I said before, we're going to be talking today primarily about teen suicide. And we're going to be talking about suicide in general. And I've been watching the show 13 Reasons Why. And I know Jenna has been watching it. And we're going to be dissecting this show today. Now, for those of you that haven't been watching this show, this is a show about a teenage girl. Her name's Hannah. And she commits suicide. And she leaves a set of tapes behind after her death. And she talks about some of the things that she's going through and some of the things that happen. And she has various ones to listen to the tapes. And, of course, everybody is real nervous about listening to them because they think they're the reason she committed suicide and that kind of thing. So it's a really interesting show, and we're going to be talking about that show. Now, Jenna, what do you think is the overall impact of this show on teen suicide?
The overall impact, in my opinion, is the facing the harsh reality. It's something that people, oh, did you hear this person committed suicide? Oh, that's so terrible. Like, there's a veneer type quality that people place on the topic itself, even though it's so deep and intense and tragic, they still don't want to face it. And my experience of the show, and I love good storytelling and I love great acting, and they did a superb job on facing difficult topics head on. And there's no looking away. And that's the biggest impact for me, is that I watched that show and was just so feeling what they were feeling and felt what it was like when I was in high school. They just really got to the core. And I think that's the impact, is to really look at the reality and to stop putting veneers on actual issues that are facing people.
Now, I will confess, I've not watched all 13 episodes. I think I'm on the fifth one. Didn't each friend play a part in her suicide?
Well, so the way the story goes, and it's really interesting because Hannah Baker, the lead character, starts off as this very vivacious, bubbly, outspoken, like her spirit is so high. Okay. So she comes to the school and that's that. And then she's also extremely sensitive. And so it's a chipping away. It's not one thing. You know, there's really huge traumas that can happen, but then you have friends and you kind of get by and you can kind of build your resilience back up. But in the case of her story, and this was another part about the brain development of teens that we can segue into either after this point or later, but she just got, you know, one thing, you know, got humiliated publicly. Okay, so that ate away her trust in men, in her sexuality, in her sense of safety among her peers. Okay, so that's a chip. And then it was chip after chip after chip. And then it's just a helplessness. And this is the only way out. And so the people, while they all contribute in their own like narcissistic way, so to speak, when you're a teenager, you're naturally narcissistic, which means you're just completely focused on yourself with very little regard for other people. That's the nature of being a teenager. Your brain hasn't fully formed. And yet the after effect, if people can really dig down deep, teenagers are also capable of cognitively deciding who they want to be if they're given that opportunity. So the other thing the show is inviting is more of those conversations, more of those school programs, more parental understanding their teen and not trying to reach them in a way that they can't reach them, if that makes any sense. Like they try to reach their kid in a way that the kid doesn't open up, like to try to find ways to connect to their teens in a way that the teen will connect to them. So, you know, there's a lot going on that contributes to that ultimate decision that is a chipping away. And that's the biggest part, is that it isn't usually one big thing. It's the overtime thing after thing after thing.
Yeah. Well, what are some of the signs that someone is being, as you say, chipped away? I mean, what are some of the signs of teen suicide? Because this no doubt happens to a lot of them. They're just being chipped away.
Yep. So you can see, they do explain in this, which is great. They explain this in the show as well, but you can see, as I said, she starts off with, and I say her spirit, because I work with spirit often, and you could see her spirit dies. She doesn't smile as much. She's not as outspoken. And now sometimes people are naturally introverted, and so they might already be that way. But in her case, a very distinct behavior change started to occur. And, you know, sometimes people will reach out to substance abuse. They will kind of get shifty and hide things and moody and isolating. And then on the flip side, they could become, in the case of a lot of type A personalities, super efficient, straight A's, no matter what, captain of the football team, no matter what. They can also channel all of their energy into this sort of extreme obsession. Two, that's not the most common. It's usually the isolation and more depressive symptoms. The drug use, change in their appearance. In her case, they do show her cut her hair as a form of trying to control something. They change their appearances. They try to control what they can. They might stumble into eating disorders as, again, another way to control in their best way. So you can really see a person shift. And to maybe not chalk it up to, oh, they're a moody teenager, but to actually just go, what is going on here? My sparkly child is not so sparkly right now. So that in her case, she was a gregarious girl. In other teens' cases, you know, the people that know the people will know their nature the best. There's a way that people show up where they really show up with vitality and brightness, and they have these quirks about their personality. But when you start to notice those die away, I call that, you know, like that's their spirit dying away. That's their like will to live is being chipped away.
And so this is obviously one of the signs that especially parents need to notice. is if your child change their personality changing a little bit, or you know, they gradually seem to be sinking into a hole or getting depressed or things like that. How could she have been helped?
Wow, that's a big question. Well, you know, you didn't get to the last scene is it's not giving anything away. The last tape is the guidance counselor at the school. And what I saw that was really heart-wrenching in the show was her parents were really fixated on their business. And of course, that's going to happen, right? So she would sort of come into the kitchen and look to be seen and heard and just, you know someone's in her corner and they're, you know, arguing about money and how are you? And, oh, you're okay. Okay, good. I can keep being busy and going along with my life. And you're fine because you said you're fine. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's just a big reality check in general, the amount of substance abuse issues, suicide, bullying, across the gamut. We all need to wake up and just see the people in front of us. And so that would be the biggest one. It's like these are real people, right? Like, it's not just about getting stuff done in your day. We've done other shows, Beverly, about presence and not being so busy and you have this life, but we're taking life for granted every day and we're busy and we've got stuff to do. And someone who's on the verge of suicide feels more and more isolated in the midst of people like that, they're incapable of listening because they're thinking about their grocery list or they're just like, oh, you're fine. Okay. You know, like there's just no presence between human beings. The guidance counselor was a particular situation that I thought as a psychotherapist, as a trained mental health professional, I was appalled by how he, and it's a character, I understand, but they do these kind of trainings. And I think ultimately the schools are going to need to beef up the training of the professionals. Because instead of actually listening to her, instead of trying to fix her, he was just all about, oh, how do I fix you and get you out the door?
Right.
You know,
he just didn't have enough. It was a lack of caring.
And training. So like, fair enough. If you're going to be a mental health professional and you're going to be a guidance counselor in a big school, I would hope the school systems are actually getting the right training on how to actually listen to a teen that's in crisis. Mm-hmm. And not try to fix them, because that's the worst you can do, because that's just another way that they're going to feel broken and go off. And again, suicide is also just kind of their last semblance of control.
Yeah.
Like, and something they can control. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, like you said, we have talked about this before in other shows, but this just reminds me of how important it is for us to slow down some.
Yes.
And to just be in the moment. And to pay attention to what's going on around us. And, you know, and we as parents really need to strive harder, I think, to connect with our kids. And not just our kids, but especially our kids, but with other people too. I mean, we've lost that connection to a great extent in this society with other people. But by not being connected to your team, then it's going to be harder to notice these things and that kind of a thing. Now, you talked about teens, the way their brain works. Let's talk a little bit about that. How is that different and it's not really fully developed, and how that plays a role in suicide?
Yeah. So, you know, and I think anybody listening, I mean, we've all been teenagers, unless you're a teenager now listening, that everything feels like forever, right? Like you get your heart broken by that boy or girl and it's forever. You know, it's this inability to see the other side of things. And that's one part brain development, two parts experience. Okay, you've been through heartbreak, so now you know how to get through heartbreak and it is going to pass. So you could tell a teenager, this is going to go away. But trust me, they do not actually believe that. They do not have the capacity to get that.
Yeah, and I want to interject here. And also, parents, if you have teenagers, please have them listen to this show. And Jenna, talk as if you're talking to teenagers and let them know that, you know, there are people that do understand them.
Okay. So, you know, if I was to talk to a teen right now, it would be, you know, listen, I wouldn't say this to them, but I do want to say this, that their frontal cortex doesn't fully develop, I wouldn't say this to a teen, but I do want the parents to know this part. So they don't, it isn't developed. And that's also why they need sleep in the mornings too. So I would also add to that, that letting your teenager sleep is also very important. I'm just going to throw that in case I forget later.
Is that why they want to sleep late in the morning?
Yes. Yes.
School. Okay. Now tell us that again. Why is it they want to sleep late? The brain is full.
Their brain's developing. Yeah. They're growing. Yeah. Like that sleep is replenishing and developing them.
Okay. Well, that's important to know. So they're not just being lazy.
No.
So what else do parents? Let's let parents hear some of this too. We need to hear more of this.
Yeah, I can speak right to the kids too, because that would be a whole other way of being that I would approach that with. Like but for the parents in particular, who I think are the majority of the people listening to the show, and then the teens listening to it as well, would be good, because I do work with teens sometimes, and I do, you know, listen deeply to what they have to say and leave a lot of space. Leave a lot of space. Like, they don't interject with a fixing. Don't, like, just chill out and listen.
And so parents need to learn how to listen to their teens.
Yeah. Stop talking. Okay. Just listen. And as soon as you think you're going to fill the space with something you want to say or something you think you should say, wait longer. Wait longer. Because it's the space that they will then fill. Because they're sitting there grappling with, are they going to share this? Should they share it? I don't know. And then if you start talking, you've actually interrupted them.
Mm-hmm. So parents need to really, literally listen way more than we speak.
Yeah. Yeah. And just as soon as you think you're going to talk, stop. Mm-hmm. Wait longer. And then as soon as you think you're going to talk, stop and wait longer, because they need that time to digest, and they're also still growing, right? Like, they could seem like little adults, and they're not. They're still growing, and they haven't quite got the ability to take a feeling into a thought, into a verbalization in order to be heard and understood. So they're going to say whatever. Mm-hmm. They're going to say, I'm okay. That's what they've got. So just, like, calm down, chill out, don't try to fix them, and then deal with your own emotions. I would recommend a lot of parents to go to their own counselors, because if you're freaked out, if they're going to say they've been raped, they're using drugs, if you can't handle that and you can't actually listen to them, you need to go get proper training yourself, proper space holding for your own emotions. And I would add that anyway, like, we're not, our friends aren't mental health professionals. They are friends, right? They don't all have the capacity to fully listen and give you the tools and the resources and the resilience that you need to then go be who you need to be with your child.
Yeah. So listening is, I mean, that just takes listening, the importance of listening, to a whole new level. So what else is their brain, you know, what else is happening to their brain, the brain of a teenager?
Well, just ultimately, our frontal cortex is the place where we make sort of the more creative problem solving choices in the face of a problem. Okay. So it's our ability to go, this or this or this or this. And our more mammalian reptilian brain is at the back of the brain, and it's reactive. It's just simply reactive. Though, stimulus reactive. Okay. Something was posted on Instagram, an unfavorable picture, you're being bullied, cyber bullied. And it's just, the reaction is, I'm going to swear, I'm a piece of shit. That's a strong feeling that kids have. Those particular words, this deep damaged feeling. And that's it. I'm damaged. Stimulus happens. I'm damaged. I'm worthless. I'm helpless. This isn't going away. This feeling, the only way to make this feeling go away is to then end it, right? Mm-hmm. And she tries on that last episode and so going back to the brain, that frontal cortex hasn't been formed yet. It doesn't form fully until you're 26. That's a long time,
that
right?
That's a very long time. That's a very long time.
So we're having kids decide their futures when they're 18. 17 now, I think. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, they need to do something, but to finish that point, that the brain that capacity to go, this just happened to me, I'm not worthless, has not formed.
Yeah, that sense of maturity.
Yeah, and just genuine development, you know, like as much as you can give them data and information that says opposite, like actually something happens, that doesn't mean you're worthless. That'll be good to say over and over again to them anyways. That's just something that happened. It doesn't determine who you are as a person, because as parents, secondly, they do tend to, oh, you're a good girl, or look at your grades, or, you know, like, look how pretty you are. Like that needs to diminish as well, because then their sense of worthiness is contingent on their weight, their looks, their grades, and that unconditional love that they need to grow fully into the best human being they could be, all of us, isn't there. It's conditional.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've got to be careful not to put conditions on what the child, you know, how the child thinks they're accepted. Well, if I'm such and such, then I'm accepted. That's not the case. And
yeah,
that's a biggie. That's a biggie. And I also think that it's, you know, as you're talking here, it's so important for us as parents to be open and non-judgmental. And we have to prove ourselves that we're that way. And you know, and I think we should do that and can do that by practicing that. It's when we hear things, when we hear other people, like other adults, tell us things, we don't need to just overreact to them instead, because the teenager and the young child is watching that. They're watching that. And if we overreact or think, oh, that's terrible, why did yada, 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 then the child is going to see that and say, well, I don't think I can tell them this if they can't handle that. So I think it's important that that we as parents have this attitude of just being open and non-judgmental to everybody, because we need to be that example and show our children that, you know, I just got some terrible news about such and such, you know, about so and so. But, you know, and if they can say, well, you know, mom handled that real well. You know, she said, well, she was understanding. She was open. She didn't judge them. She just said, well, you know, that person was just having some problems we didn't understand, or something like that. Then that's going to help that child say,
absolutely,
well, you know, I can probably tell mom that. So I think there's some big takeaways from, you know, from us talking about this.
Yeah.
Because we've got to be careful of the example in what we're, you know, the impression we're giving to our children.
Yeah, that's a great example. Actually, when I work with a lot of parents, and it's they learn from who you're being, not what you say to them.
Right.
It's the stuff you do every day. It's the, you know, somebody burns your toast and you flip on them because you're frustrated and you haven't learned to deal with your frustration. And now they feel like, every one of us needs to deal with our stuff. And as a society, with your show and a lot of other things, Beverly, there's more opportunities to actually work on yourself and attain that type of level-headedness. The ability to deal with emotions, the ability to take a moment and use that frontal cortex, because furthermore, teens haven't even developed it and most adults don't use it. They're in that, if they listen to that Adrenaline to Inspiration show, or that was the article I wrote, but the show that we did, Beverly, on that flipping from adrenaline to inspiration, like those are the things that everyone needs to do, that everyone's waking up to going, wait a second, like, I'm running around like a chicken with my head cut off and I'm not even enjoying my life, and I'm reacting to my kid, I'm reacting to my boss, I'm reacting to traffic. Like, who wants that? But that's all we're doing. I mean, as a society, I've checked out. I'm living in nature, and I've been like, nope, no thank you. I'm going to create my life. But that's that frontal cortex. You can't actually use that part of your brain until you've calmed down your nervous system. Mm-hmm. And that's why mindfulness is growing. So at the same time as the suicide and bullying epidemic is happening, we've got mindfulness. We've got, like, I've got my program, You Are the Manual. I'm like, hey, this is actually how a human being works. There's more resources than ever. And it's up to us to actually take the time and make it a priority for our kids, for the next generation, and then ultimately for ourselves too. Because even if you're, you know, 50, 60, 70, however old, this is still going to lead to your vitality and then trickle down to the other generations.
Yeah. So you mean it's not normal for we as adults to be in a stressed frenzy all the time?
It doesn't have to be.
It's actually the norm for America, but it's not really the norm for a human being to be in a stressed state. Well, Jenna, I'm going to tell you, you're going to be proud of me because I am calming down off of that stressed high horse I have been on. And I'm actually kind of proud of myself a little bit because I am doing pretty good. I've still got a ways to go, but I think it's good for me anyway with this type of personality I am. But I have started slowing down some and trying to calm my mind down more. I've still got to get out in nature more, but I still do that some. And, you know, it does. It feels a lot better.
And you're
able to think better. So, folks, there is hope for you. I mean, if I can do it, you can do it. Believe me. And again, I'm not totally there yet, but I'm working on it. I'm a continual work in progress here.
Well, we're a new breed of talk radio and with a new breed of host and shows to entertain and inform you. It's America Out Loud Talk Radio with shows like Blue Lives Radio, OPSEC Radio Special Operations, shows that impact your health, like The Misdiagnosed Life, The Dr. Stem Show, and our newest show, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. Thank you for sharing part of your day with us here at America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. Well, looking good and feeling good are not exactly the same thing. It's just like a car. It may look good from the outside, but what's the inside look like? More importantly than that, what's the inside of your cells look like? That's a question you need to ask yourself. Well, when I started taking Healthy Cell just a few months ago, it has changed my program. I mean, it's boosted my energy. I sleep better, sharper focus. I feel healthier, and hopefully we'll all live longer with improved cells. Well, 90-plus nutrients infused into every cell of your body. Well, this is an exclusive offer for Friends of America Out Loud. You can try it today free. When I say free, I mean free. It's our Healthy Cell Pro 7-Day Sample. Free shipping, no risk, no obligation, no credit card required. So this is a complimentary gift from America Out Loud. You can go to healthycell.com/outloudsample or just go to americaoutloud.com and click the large banner ad and our complimentary gift will be on its way to your home.
This is Beverly Butler and you're listening to the Misdiagnosed Life podcast and talk radio on the America Out Loud Network. And I want to remind you to be sure and follow me on Twitter at Podcast for Life and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and rate and review the show. I'd love to hear from you. And I'm talking today to Jenna Smith, and we're talking about the show 13 Reasons Why and Teen Suicide, which that's what that show is about. Now, what part do you think, I know that a lot of these children, I don't know the percentage, but are bullied. What part do you think is bullying, does bullying play in teen suicides?
Yeah, I think it's huge. I mean, it's because the bully and the person being bullied are both coming back to just before the break, the inner child experience, right? That part of us, that there isn't literally a little child in us. We're always our inner child. We just grow up into adults and usually leave that part behind, you know? Yeah. But that vulnerable part of us to bully somebody also has to be gone. And so the bully could commit suicide because that isn't who they want to be. That's just the only option they have. Maybe their dad is a domineering dad. Or their mom is a domineering mom, and that's their model. In order for me to have power, I have power over others. And they're just playing out their role, and they don't know any better. Again, frontal cortex not fully developed. They don't have the option of choosing a different way of being. So they're, ironically, there's some kids that are just genuinely bad-natured, you know? Mm-hmm. And I see hope in every human being, but there are some pretty nasty kids out there. But to me, that's just shows how, even as you said, loving the ones who seem to deserve it the least, they're hurting more, they're more shut down. So the whole dynamic, right, the bullied and the bullies needs healing and help. And of course, if you're, and I think with social media, furthermore, I'm so glad that this wasn't my teenage years. I mean, there's a lot of parties I do not want pictures of that last forever.
Oh, like, yeah. Can you imagine? You know? Yeah. Yeah, social media is like a double-edged sword. And can you imagine if some of these pictures that in that show 13 Reasons Why, if that was you or your child, that's put out there for the world to see, essentially. I mean, that could be just devastating. That could be devastating for kids, for adults, but especially kids.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so that it's that level of bigness and helplessness and hopelessness. So, of course, the bullying situation is off the chain. I mean, and it goes that's the same solution is to calm down, connect, go like calm down, slow down. It's the same solution because then your emotions can actually get processed and then your mind can actually get clear. But we don't do that as a society. So the solution is the same across the board for both the bullied and the bullies that they're just reacting, right? And then so when you're getting bullied and it's social media and it's all the time and you can't control it, it's so painful. It's so painful. Like, I mean, I can barely even handle it. I mean, I've been moderating my career in visibility because I'm so afraid of criticism. It's just a pervasive fear that we all have. And now I'm like, okay, there's going to be people criticizing me. There's going to be people loving me. I'm willing to have both. But again, that's because I've grown up. I've done so much of my own self-work. But when they're teens, it's like getting bullied is forever and it's never going to go away. And it's that never going to go away thing. Uh-huh. Right. Yeah. It's such a contributing factor.
Yeah. And you talked about, I want to back up just a little bit because you talked about when, like people are bullied or various things happen to these kids that they tend to, they either commit suicide or tend to be those type that commit suicide. You say that they lose a part of themselves as they're being chipped away, mm-hmm. that they lose a part of themselves. And I think bullying definitely plays a part in that.
Yes.
What happens, because this is traumatic to them. Now,
absolutely.
Something happens to our soul, to that part of us, and there's something out there, and I think you work with this some, called soul retrieval. What happens when we lose part of ourselves? I think that is kindly on a spiritual realm. That's literally happening, isn't it, according to some?
Yes. Yes.
What is that? And what is really happening? And how can you do, there's something that you can do called soul retrieval.
Yes, there is. Yeah. And I do that. And it's also similar to any type of therapist that does inner parts work, just to throw that out there. So shamanically speaking, and these are indigenous medicines, right? So this was before Western medicine. This was before the age of intelligence and knowledge and thinking and codifying it into textbooks. So both are the same thing. It's the concept that so you're bullied that first time. So let's use Hannah Baker as that she knows she's this vivacious, sparky girl, right? And she's, you know, the way she's talking to people is very open. And then that dies. And so that part of her died in that experience. And it's not gone completely. It's kind of left her being, so to speak. I don't know if this is helpful for people to tangibly understand it, but more or less it's wrapped up. It's kind of bound by the pain of that experience. Mm-hmm. And as long as the pain of that experience isn't processed, it like just like digesting food, just like I eat a piece of broccoli, if that doesn't process in my colon, that's deathly, right? Mm-hmm. So it's the same thing on the mental, emotional, spiritual plane, is that the bound pain that we have the inability to digest and release then is holding that part of us back in that exact moment. So when I work with adults, they'll have a pain when they were 16 and it's that gift in them. It's like the concept of wounds to medicine. That gift in them is also bound in that part of their spirit, that part of their being. And it's actually not that woo-woo. It's just the part of you. It's a part of you mm-hmm. that gets lodged in the pain that hasn't been expressed, that hasn't been have been released fully. And that's actually the definition of trauma, in my opinion. It isn't the thing that happens. It's the inability to express it, to complete completion, to heal, to just be like, oh, that happened. It's like touching a wound that's still raw and it hurts still, and touching a scar and being like, yeah, that happened.
Yeah. And it's not so much that, I mean, it's like you lose a part of yourself.
Yes. Yeah, you do.
And I also wanted to say, you know, when you talked about the Native Americans, I believe you said that that came up with this. It was not that they, and I don't think you meant it exactly like this. It's not that they weren't intelligent. They were just intelligent in a different way.
The intelligence was already there.
More of their intuition and more of their connection with what they would call spirit or God. And so this is stuff that came from them, and what they did worked. So
my point of saying that was that we do this modern day psychotherapy is also soul retrieval. When you go back and you talk about when you were 6 years old and this happened, you're unlocking that part of you, and that part can then come back. And so a similar experience happens. Now, on a spiritual level, when they do ceremony, they would get together, they would take the person who, is maybe acting out with rage or something, and they'll do soul retrieval, you know, like, because that part of them that essentially was lost or died needs to come back into their body. And then they would, that would happen on the energetic level, and it works. And part of what works is also what we believe. So because that was their culture and that was their belief system, that also contributed to that working, because we have that ability to believe in something and then it works. But there is an energetic experience that does happen, that when you facilitate it. So with soul retrieval, I wasn't taught soul retrieval from a mentor. It was just what happened naturally in seeing somebody as whole and complete, and then the parts could come back. It's like creating a fertile garden. If you haven't created the resilience and the safety for that part to come back, it won't. It'll stay lost. And what that could mean is the enthusiasm that I mentioned. So that part could be dead, because sometimes we kill our enthusiasm because we're so afraid of the disappointment that might have happened at some point. We really wanted a pony. We didn't get a pony and it broke our heart. So we just don't do enthusiasm anymore. Yeah. So it's that tangible. The part of us that trusts people can die, right? And then like we just never trust people, and it hardens us. And it takes away our vitality and our soul, that inspired in spirit part of us that is whole and complete as it is. But our humanness can kind of muck it up a bit, as far as the mind will be like, ooh, don't feel enthusiasm because that means pain. So don't do that.
Yeah. So really, in reality, it's really like pieces of us die.
Yeah.
You know, in a sense, they can be retrieved.
They can be
back.
Retrieved. They never really die, because energy never ends, but it feels like it.
Correct.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah. And now, would this not affect a person's feelings? I mean, could a person start shutting off their feelings towards certain things?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because ultimately, pain is what causes that, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. So we're on an animal level going to seek pleasure and avoid pain. So we're multidimensional beings. You know, we have our physical experience, we have our mental experience, we have our spiritual experience and our emotional experience. Like, there's lots going on. It's not just get stuff done or how you look. It's there's so much going on in who we are. So at our essential core, as an animal, we are going to avoid pain at any cost. And if we're coming from that place, if the happy feeling created pain, we're going to just destroy the happy feeling. That's the mind that isn't connected to the heart and the soul. That's its logical game plan. It's very militant. It's like, oh, no, okay, so no more enthusiasm for you.
Yeah, because it's trying to protect us in a sense.
Yes, exactly. And so to not even villainize the mind. So I'm not even saying our minds are brilliant and awesome, but it's that they're never meant to heal the way the body and the heart and the spirit do. And it's all of those things working in conjunction that are who we are. As I said, that is who we are. So we work with the totality of who we are to create whole and complete healing, because it isn't just about doing affirmations and saying, I'm going to take space. It's about doing it experientially in your body. I was going to also mention, we leave our bodies when we're in pain as well. It's like, we just don't feel our body. We don't notice when we're tired. We don't even notice when we're hungry or thirsty. We just go. We're left our body. Our experience of ourselves and our body is gone. And that is also a contributing factor, because when we leave our body, that instinct, the intelligence in our body is now gone. And so we're even more alone, right?
Right. Yeah. And I've seen this in my own child. And I've just recently kind of learned kind of what that was. And, you know, when she's practically well now, but she would at times, in essence, leave a part of her would leave her body because I could see, and they get this look in their eyes.
Yeah.
They get this look in their eyes like they're just not there,
you know?
And that's literally what is happening. A part of them is not there if they're, going through, a lot of pain or trauma or whatever, And as a lot of people know, my daughter's had Lyme disease, and we've gone through a lot with that. But like I say, she's practically well now, and we're finding that this has been a whole lot more to that than just that, so which often happens. So that is a very interesting thing that you said, because like I said, that I've seen that happen, and there's probably some other parents out there too so that have seen that too. So what should a parent do if they start seeing this in their children? They're talking to them, and they can, and now mother knows, a mother always knows, you can look at your child and you can tell by looking at their eyes, you get an idea of kind of what's going on if you're paying attention. So what should parents do if they look at their child and they just get this look in their eyes, this dazed look in their eyes, and they can tell they're leaving, part of them's not there, and they start noticing other things, and because you want to catch problems early.
Yeah, that's a tricky one. For parents that aren't, like, I know what I would do because I have all my training and stuff like that, so I would trust my intuition. But I could say that across the board is to trust your intuition. Ultimately, that's my biggest advice, is to get into your body. Are you in your body, first of all? And then,
be fully present and pay attention to what's going on around you.
Yeah. And kind of taking your own deep breath. And sometimes they need to check out for a while because that's their only way to experience relief. So to also not make this wrong or bad. So don't get me wrong. We don't want to throw them back into their bodies before it feels safe either. Like if they're experiencing emotional or mental or physical trauma, they might need to leave their body because there's a reason for it. There's a reason that we do that, to keep ourselves, to actually survive. We'll leave these traumatic experiences in order for our full soul to come back later. The problem is we don't come back later. So I would say the things that bring people enthusiasm, the natural value systems that occur from that person's spirit, like if they like going for a walk, go for a walk with them. If they like playing video games, play video games with them. Do what they do to the best of your ability. Don't be fake, but just kind of enter their world with them. And then you're going to reach them on their level. And then they'll like feel that synergy with you. And it will matter very little what you actually say. It's the beingness that you're being with them. And they feel safe with you just walking. Even if you're not talking, going for a bike ride, going to a movie, not talking, right? So it's just the ability to feel safe in your presence that's going to also allow them to just, okay, I can be here fully now.
Mm-hmm. I think that is just like... huge. I mean, that's worth the whole podcast right there, what you just said. Just being with them. You don't have to say anything. Just being with them and in their energy field and connect with them that way with your child, it makes a huge difference. And of course, if a parent sees the problem getting worse, or at any point a parent feels it's needed, always seek help. Seek help to the proper counselor and get the proper guidance to help the situation. And the sooner the better, because you do not, that's just good across the board with anything. Well, Jenna, I want to talk we have just a little bit of time left. You said your dad committed suicide. I want you to speak on that just a minute, because this is something, of course, that happens in all age groups, and for all people.
Mm-hmm.
What happened? What do you think went wrong that people do that?
That led to that. So, I mean, at the time I was an adult, and I was just starting, I was around 29 at the time. So, the my ability to digest it was different. So I was an adult at the time, and he committed suicide mostly because of all of those contributing factors I mentioned. He had been chipped away at. My parents divorced when I was 15. And so he'd been alone. I think he had some girlfriends, but I never knew about them. But furthermore, he had the contributing factors of suicide are also mental illness. So he did have bipolar disorder. And when he was eating well, and when he was getting outdoors, he was a very nature loving person. So that's his spirit, right? So his spirit's gonna blossom when he's in nature and when he's doing stuff with animals, and he just loves stuff like that. So he was doing stuff like that at the time. But what happened was, you know, just a domino effect. So we had an F3 tornado in my hometown, and which is a huge, huge tornado. And so that ripped through the entire center of the town. And he was down at this Goderich salt mine, second largest salt mine in the world, right on Lake Ontario, Lake Ontario's in Toronto, right on Lake Huron in Goderich. And the storm starts coming in, and there was sunshine and then tornado. So there was like, no, oh, we got to do something here. And what he witnessed was the violent death of his friend of 25 years. A piece of metal crushed him. So you can imagine.
Oh, that would be horrible.
Horrifying. This was the second violent death that he had witnessed at work. Wow. The other one, the man fell through the salt chute and was, again, they're disgustingly violent and atrocious experiences. You know, like war, like people are experiencing these things. So not to say he's special, but any human experiencing that helplessness. And apparently, I believe he was just in that spot and walked, and then it hit him. So he had survivor's guilt, extreme survivor's guilt. Yeah, this man had just remarried. Oh, yeah. And he, you know, he just felt like it was his responsibility to take care of these people. So he also held on during an F3 tornado. So the extensive micro tears in his muscles and connective tissue and the pain he would have from that was also happening. Furthermore, his company were basically jerks. They made it difficult for him to get money. They, you know, obviously he had to take leave. Obviously the entire place was destroyed and needed to be rebuilt. And with all of his trauma on every single level of his being, they let him down. They made it hard for him to get money, hard for him to get support. It was just disgusting.
He was hit in every way.
Yeah. And he was just done. Like he was just done. And I know he kind of decided a couple months before he did it. And like, I feel like he decided in September that I'm just done. And then in November, he actually committed suicide, and he did it in the same manner. He used a X-Acto knife on his wrist. And that's why when I watched 13 Reasons Why, I was just like, oh my gosh, this is so confronting.
Yeah, I couldn't say that.
This is so real. And it's so graphic, right? So of course you have to have been such a state, bring a blade to your skin and push and continue to push. Like, wow, right? Like yeah,
that's a very low state, devastating.
So, and the commitment, right? I am done. This is the only way comes. And so in his case, he had so many things that it wasn't that surprising. It was devastating. It was, you know, when someone's like, oh, when I was told that he had died, I was sleeping. I was on vacation. Actually at the American holiday, I was invited to a New York Thanksgiving and actually New Jersey. And I was away. I had my phone off. People were calling me. And actually on Facebook, I got this message, oh, my condolences, or are you okay? And I'm like, I'm good, because the tornado happened a couple months before. I thought it was a trickle effect of the tornado, because our town was ripped apart. Like my mom's house and all of these things were happening. There was a lot going on
at once. Huh? That makes it doubly hard.
Yeah. So the tornado happened the end of August. And then, I think like the 24th or 26th, and then he committed suicide November 24th of 2011. And, it was just like, the shock of, okay, but he's not sick, you know, like your mind doesn't even know what to do. But you know what I will share is his it was a very difficult day, because I didn't know how he died. I didn't know what was going on. I was hearing bits and pieces of there was lots of blood and there's caution tape and like, so was he murdered? Like, so the experience on the other side of hearing about it secondhand was very stressful for me.
I bet it freaked you out.
Oh my gosh. I didn't, like, cause it's, you didn't know. And when we don't know, our imagination goes so the detective that I eventually called, it took me a while to actually call him. I had to gear up for it. He said, you know, cause he's worked with suicide before. And he said, you know, I don't see suicide any different than a heart attack. It's just that the mind gives out.
Wow. That's an interesting observation.
Mm-hmm. And in his case, yeah, you know, like as his daughter and as a therapist, I had to deal with my own guilt of, should I have done something? Should I, you know, but ultimately it was like, it was just his decision. It's tragic because I went through this deep healing experience where I sobbed for hours of how much pain he was in. It wasn't that he died. It was the amount of pain he was in.
Yeah.
That me the most. And then there's, of course, he's not there to see me do this and he's not there to see me that. So there's a lot of levels and that the experiencer on the other side of suicide will experience. But you know, it is sort of a club you get invited into, not invited, but inadvertently thrown into, of people experiencing suicide in their lives. It's a distinct feeling. So I would recommend people to have people that they know are going to support groups that have experienced the suicide, because it's very shocking. It just makes you want to live more. You feel the pain of their pain. It makes you feel helpless because society is just in such a state that this is happening. Like, there's a lot to digest in all of that. Of course, this was enough years ago now that I can say all of this consciously, fully in my body, with my heart open, and not be affected by the pain, which is what I was saying about fully process pain. Will I cry if I see, I don't know, I might, because it still works its way through our system in a spiral. But my experience was, he was just in so much pain. Like, that's one of the biggest takeaways, that these people are in so much pain, and he'd be happy. He'd be walking down the street. He had everyone fooled.
Yeah.
The world fooled.
And that happens a lot. People act a lot better than they really are on the inside.
Yeah. And I will say a very urgent risk that they are about to commit suicide is actually that they start to perk up for no apparent reason.
Yeah.
Because they've decided. They have a plan.
They've made a decision.
For the first time, they have control. And so they kind of perk up before they do it sometimes.
I haven't thought about that. No, that is a good, that's a good warning sign right there.
Mm-hmm.
So if people are, I just want to say this, we're almost out of time. I thank you so much, Jenna, for your bits of wisdom that you've talked about here on the show. And for those that, if you think someone is thinking about suicide, or if you yourself are thinking about it, please understand there is help. And even though you may be going through a lot, there's always the other side, and it will pass. It will pass. Everything always passes. Nothing ever stays the same. So please don't ever give up hope. And I want to let you know that if you are thinking about it, I want to give out the U.S. National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. It's 1-800-273-8255. 1-800-273-TALK or 8255. So always remember that nothing ever lasts forever. The hard times, the difficult times will pass, and that there is help out there. Don't be afraid to ask for help. If you or your child that are going through problems, the sooner you address those, the better. And remember, as we go through things in life, sometimes we're just chipped away. And we need to, as soon as we realize what's happening, again, get help. If you really feel like you need help, then get help. Even if you don't, maybe if you're going through a lot, it still would be good to talk to someone just to help clear the air, so to speak, and to help you feel better, because you never know what one thing might lead to another thing, and then you may wake up and you feel like you're in a hole one day. So always remember to get help when you need it. And again, we're not giving any medical advice or anything on this show, but we do want you to know that there is help out there, and there are very good counselors that can help you, so always get help when you need it. Again, thank you, Jenna, and thank you for listening. This is Beverly Butler, and you've been listening to the Misdiagnosed Life podcast and talk radio on the America Out Loud Network.